Are you lost in wrestling? Can't find a good match clearly? Well, stop looking and start listening. Everything is about to become crystal clear because you have now entered Wrestling Clarity with your host, Andre C.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's edition of the Wrestling Clarity. I am your host, Andre C. This week, we have a bit of a different edition for you. Coming up next is going to be part one of an interview I conducted with PWA's own Frenetico. Great interview. I got to sit down with him. We recorded for almost a couple hours, so you're going to hear part one this week on the Wrestling Clarity. So, I'm going to throw to that interview right now. So, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy this week's edition of Inside the Wrestler's Lives with my special guest, Frenetico.
This is Inside the Wrestler's Lives.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Inside the Wrestler's Lives. I'm Andre C., and I'm here with the Smurf himself, Frenetico. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing?
Pretty good. It's nice to have you on the program.
Yeah, podcast is Frenetico today.
Yeah, all about Frenetico today. So let's get this started. Where were you born and where are you from?
I was born and raised in Minto, New Brunswick.
Okay, so Easterner.
Yeah, East Coast, and I moved out here when I was 18, just right out of high school.
Okay, so any specific reason came out? You moved, got to get away, just you knew it'd be better here? Or?
Yeah, small town, kind of saw the writing on the wall with jobs and whatnot, and I had a scholarship going to university back there, but didn't really see the point of getting an education for a job that wasn't going to be there, so West was booming pretty good at the time, so I moved out here to go to school and go to Nate, and been here since.
All right, so I guess it's about everybody. What's your first memory of wrestling, your first time seeing it? What is that for you?
And you'll probably hear this from a lot of people. My grandmother used to babysit me before I started going to school when I was like 3 or 4 years old, and she was a huge wrestling fan. And so I remember sitting in the living room with her. I don't remember specifically the match, but I know it involved Ric Flair, and she hated Ric Flair, and it was just so captivating for me to see the emotion that, you know, just these characters on TV could get out of people, you know, especially like older people and like my grandmother, and looking past that, I really just enjoyed the characters and the physicality of it.
So like especially Ric Flair, like his ability just to captivate anybody.
Yeah.
Is okay. So what got you started into wrestling, like getting involved in wrestling? Like,
you mean like actual like getting to sort of where I'm to now?
Like, well, what? Okay, let's go with this. How did you first figure out how to be involved in the business? Like,
oh yeah, sure.
Going to shows, or
yeah. Even back east, Stampede Wrestling. Even if you didn't see it, you knew what it was if you were a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
And so the legend, quote unquote, of
the dungeon
and whatnot out here is big. Doesn't matter where you're at. And as a kid growing up, I was a huge fan, right from, like I said, 3 or 4 years old, and I had friends. We were all, you know, backyard wrestling and, you know, basements and
whatever. We've all had. I think everybody's done that one.
And, you know, everybody always said at the time, you know, when I grew up, I'm going to be a wrestler, and because that's what we were into at the time, and people grew out of that. And I never lost sight of that. So when I got older, even when wrestling wasn't, quote-unquote, wasn't cool to watch it anymore, I still kept my finger on everything and kept my finger on what was happening out west, even when I was still living back east.
Nice.
Because I had a feeling I was going to end up out here, and I did. So when I moved out here, I kept my eye open. And what happened was, when I was going to Nate, there was a column in the Nate newspaper called At Ringside, and it was written by Mike McGuire. I don't know if you know who he is. He's a radio host. I think he's Regina now, but at the time he was doing lots of stuff with PWA, and he had a contest, and it was just write in what's your favorite wrestling story, and so I wrote in about the first wrestling show I ever went to was in New Brunswick, a little town called Chipman, which is neighboring of my hometown. And
what's the promotion?
It was Atlantic Grand Prix Wrestling.
Okay, so still in business, yeah, run by Rene Dupree's father, right?
Yeah, and they were still just running their summer tour shows, which they've redone now. So the show was I don't remember most of the show. I remember the main event was Bad News Brown versus Sexton Hardcastle.
Oh, Edge himself, yeah. Sexton Hardcastle.
Yeah, and so I was probably 11 or 12 years old at the time, and after the show, we went to the convenience store right across the street from the arena, and there was two wrestlers in there, Bad News Brown and a guy named Wild Man Austin, who was Gary Williams, I think is his name.
I can't say I'm familiar with him. So.
Yeah, so anyhow, I saw Bad News Brown, and I was like, oh man, I have to go talk to him. And so I go to talk to the guy, and...
Legend.
Yeah.
Just his name alone.
I was so scared, because the guy was such a badass, you know? And I go say, hey, how are you, Bad News? And he growled at me. Just, literally growled at me.
Keeping kayfabe alive.
Absolutely. And I stood there, I didn't say anything, I didn't even move, I just about crapped my pants. And then he left, and I left, and I was like, holy crap, I can't believe that happened, so... I wrote that story, and I wrote in to get to win this contest, and I won. And the prize was tickets to the PWA show that was that weekend or something like that at the Nate Gymnasium.
So that was probably your first time going to PWA?
Show was the show they crowned the first PWA heavyweight champion.
Okay.
So it was cool to be there for the...
So you've been going PWA alone for a long time then?
Yeah.
How many years? Like, since the like, early
That was or? 2000... That would have been probably late 2002, early 2003, something like that.
Okay.
So that you... The Red Thunder autograph up there was from that show.
Okay. If you're wondering what that is, I'm going to be putting a couple pictures up on Facebook with Frenetico showing his Smurf cave that we're currently sitting in. Yeah. So don't worry, you'll get to see what he's talking about, the Red Thunder autograph on the wall.
So from there, I kept my finger on what PWA was doing because I knew if I wanted to try wrestling... This was probably going to be the avenue for it to go down. And this was before I had found out about all these other promotions that were in Edmonton. I don't even know how many there were at the time, because PWA
at that point was probably the big one in town at the time.
I think Monster Pro had just started.
I think they were about 2000, 2003, I think.
It was So I kept my finger on it, and it was quite a bit later, after Facebook kind of was making its way around, and they used to do mini camps. PWA used to do mini camps.
So that's how. So getting started, getting started in the business was the PWA mini camps for you then.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how you started. So go how those go for you.
The first one I went to, was kind of funny because I was just terrified partly because I didn't know what I was getting myself into, and partly because. You know, as a child, this was my dream, you know, to get inside of a wrestling ring and to do that. And how many people do you know actually get to live their dream, you know, when they're
very few. Like, I've been lucky. I've gotten to be involved in wrestling with the podcast. I've been involved in the past couple of years, but I never thought I'd get to be as close to wrestling as I've been in the past few years. And so getting to get in there is even crazier.
So I emailed Kurt and said, Kurt Sorokin, and said, you know, I want to get involved in this minicamp. So I met with him, and you pay your whatever the fee was, and the deal was you got 4 or 5 hour training session and a t-shirt and tickets to that night's show. And so
I just remember showing it to the casino shows, and then just knowing there was a mini camp going on before, and thinking to myself, why didn't I do this? Oh yeah, because I don't want to take a beating.
Yeah, well, and that's what the first the camp was. There was probably 6 or 7 of us that showed up, and you know, they really. They didn't abuse us, but they certainly wanted to put you through a little pace and
they wanted to see if you guys were tough
if you
enough.
Could do it. Yeah, could you do this? Could you get up? And it was the trainers were Michael Blaze and Richie Rage was there.
Michael Blaze, definitely a guy you want to learn from.
Yeah, and I learned on the first day, not personally, but I saw it happen. A guy who thought he was. We were doing a little drill at the end where we were basically just doing like a 2-minute match with Michael, and this guy was all Superman about it, and it didn't matter what we were doing, he would, you can't beat me, because this guy was involved in MMA at the time, and he's like, you can't beat me up, I'm an MMA guy.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and we called him MMA guy, that was his nickname. Everybody kind of has a nickname in wrestling, we can get that later. So Michael gave him a snapmare, and... you know, those vicious kicks that you still see him do to this day.
He kicks hard,
and he certainly did that day. And the guy laid there And a little bit of agony, you kind of catching his breath, and we were like, there, that'll teach you.
It doesn't matter. It's MMA. Dude, you still get kicked hard in wrestling, yeah, whether you're tough in MMA.
Yeah.
I'll say this. Like, I've watched MMA training guys. They train hard. They work hard. But I watch wrestlers, and especially the guys who work consistently, they get it's tougher on a wrestler, I'd say, because you guys work, like a lot of wrestlers, especially when you get to the bigger leagues, you're working almost every night of the week. An MMA guy works every few months and he has his training camps. Yeah, they're tough, but
yeah,
you guys got to consistently get beat up every night
and be at the same caliber
every time. You can't get beat up one night and then be the beat up guy the next night if you're in front of a different crowd. You got to be that refreshed, yeah. Especially being a baby face too, as you are. You got to be that. You got to be always be up and ready to go, right?
Yeah,
and unless you're selling an angle, it's
yeah. And it's difficult. And that first camp was a first concussion for me as well.
Concussion, really? Yeah. First time?
Yeah, it was. We were bumping. That was our.
Oh, just tuck the
way.
The neck?
Yeah, I didn't tuck my chin, and it was the second bump I took. Oh. And the way they teach you how to do it, or at least one method of doing it, is they call it box horsing. So one guy gets down on his hands and knees. You stand, or he sort of sits behind you. And they come and they just push you, and you go.
So you don't have to. Because some guys I've seen the training videos are scared just to fall back. So if they push you, you have no choice but to fall.
Exactly. Okay. And so if you don't tuck your chin, there's not really a lot of good ways.
You can even knock yourself out doing that too.
Yeah, wow. And that's how that went. And after the show or after the training camp, and I knew I was messed up because I. Oh, it was bad. I had a headache for 10 days
straight. I got to ask you one question for that.
Sure.
But it was still, you still wanted more, right?
Yeah, we were only 5-10 minutes into the camp, and I remember laying on the mat going, okay, I got to get up. You know, I can't just lay here. I have to get up. This is something I want to do. I can't stop now. And so I got up, and the rest of the camp, you know, there was some quiet guys there, and I was probably the oldest guy at the camp. But I wanted to make sure everybody was at least having a good time. And when you're starting to do something like this, it's hard. So I tried to be as encouraging as I can to these. I didn't know what these guys were. Hey, good job, good bump, good try, you know, whatever. One of the other guys that was in that camp, first time I met him, was a guy you guys may know as Benaik MD.
Also, he was he was trained originally.
Yeah.
Funny story, I met him at a small show in Morinville when he first moved to Alberta, and I told him to go to PWA. I can honestly say I told him about PWA. I don't know if I was the one that told him to go to the camps, but I put him on to PWA so I can say I had a little bit of influence on his career.
Yeah. the funny story with that, afterwards, I didn't know this at the time, but it became apparent to him anyways that me and him were the only guys of the seven that were probably going to be able to do another camp, just based on what we were doing and what we weren't doing and things like that.
How physical you could get.
Right. We were probably the two bigger guys, which is saying something considering how small I really am.
Yeah.
But he told me afterwards, whenever we would start a drill, I was always the first guy to go because I wanted to show a little bit of initiative. And so what he would do is he would watch and see what I would do, and then he would just do what I did.
Yeah.
And afterwards, everyone was like, hey, Nick, Mike, you guys are really good. Like, and he told me that afterwards, that's how he got through that camp, because he just kind of copied me. So.
It's like, follow the guy that's number one. If you can follow him, you're probably okay.
Yeah. So shout out to Maniac. I know your secret.
So your training happened around what year? So I want to know when you got started in this, at least. Like, 06, 07?
No. It's only been like 3 years, 3-4 years.
Oh, okay, so.
Yeah, it hasn't really been that long.
Oh, okay, so around 2010 then.
Yeah, and around there sort of when it all started.
I guess I would have been around the casino camps then. I guess I'm thinking a little too far back, aren't I?
Sort of towards the end of the casino days.
Yeah.
And then we moved to the sports
dome. I remember those holes that they broke.
Yeah.
The holes that kind of got them kicked at. The one spot that got repeatedly broken multiple times. Remember that.
Yeah, and then from there, we went to the Sports Dome, and we weren't there for very long. I don't think I ever saw
a show there.
There wasn't any shows there. It was just training.
Oh, okay.
And so it didn't really last too long there. I don't really know what happened. And then from there, when I found out that they weren't going to train anymore, I went to Monster Pro.
Okay, so you've worked with Sean. Been to the Monster Pro school then?
Yep. I was only there for about 3 months. I learned a great deal there. I guess it's hard for, like, if someone says who trained you, it's sort of been a handful of guys. So
you've gotten a good bit of different training though.
Yeah. I've had a
one question. How many PW mini camps did you go to?
I went to probably 4 mini camps. It sort of turned into like between every show or before every show at the casino, we would do a mini camp, and then we did the same thing in Calgary for a couple of times. And I think they stopped doing them because it ended up being like me and Maniac were the only guys that were showing up. So it sort of became, okay, well, we're not going to charge you for this anymore. You guys are just going to kind of start doing stuff.
Do ring crew, do all
that. Yeah, so I went to Monster Pro, and that's where Maniac went as well. And so I trained there for about 3 months. I had a shoulder injury, which turned out to be a slightly torn rotator cuff.
Ooh.
And yeah. It didn't happen at Monster Pro. I'm fairly certain it happened earlier than that.
Okay.
And so what happened was they didn't want me doing a whole lot of in-ring stuff once they found out I was hurt, because they didn't want me to, A, hurt myself anymore, and B, they didn't want me to hurt somebody else.
Just in case that rotator cuff gives out, you have a guy up.
Exactly.
Lifting him, even just a basic lift, you could hurt a guy. It's really bad that way.
So I decided to take some time off. I took a trip back home, things like that. And when I came back, it just wasn't the same for me. The thing with Monster Pro, what's the best way of putting this? They're very much live, breathe, eat, sleep Monster Pro Wrestling, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's a great attitude to have. The problem I had with it was that I could not devote that much time and energy into it because of my family, and I wasn't going to...
You have outside responsibilities.
Exactly. And I wasn't willing to shirk my chores at home with my kids and my wife to focus more on wrestling. And so...
I get you. You got to put your priorities first.
Yeah. And those guys at Monster Pro that...
Great guys. I've been involved with them. We've done... Got a great interview out of Chris Parrish a month ago.
Yeah.
So I great crew. I've gotten to work with them over the past while.
Yeah. They're very much like that's their life, and that's awesome for them. It's just it wasn't one that I
not for you. Facilitate. It's just you decided a different. Yeah.
So what happened was I called up Kurt, and just there happened to be a show that night, and I called him up, said, "Hey man, can I come on out and help? You know, do something, set up chairs, whatever. Just I just want to be part of a show." And he said, "Yeah, sure, come on out." And what happened was, I don't remember what happened exactly with the referees, but they were missing a referee.
Okay.
And so they were kind of panicking, and Kurt was actually going to end up refereeing part of that show.
I would have loved to have seen that.
They had nobody else. So
well, I guess Kurt used to ref back in the day. I know that from his Stampede days and everything. I know I think he ref back then.
Oh, maybe, yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, I know he had a career in Stampede, and I think he did some reffing back in the day, so.
So, I happened to be standing there when they were kind of talking about what they were going to do, and I just said, "Hey, I can do it." And they said, "Well, have you done it before?" And I said, "Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I did a little bit at Monster Pro. You know, they did a little bit of training for referees because it's an important part."
Well, yeah, if they need a ref, and they need a guy.
Yeah, so... They were kind of stuck on what to do, so they said, "Yeah, you know what? We'll get you to ref." I think I ref'd 2 matches that night. So I don't know if you'll recall me coming out with a referee shirt and a pair of jeans, because that's all I had.
Hey, and, as long as you're wearing the stripes, is what matters.
Yeah, so I helped them out that night, and it was kind of fun from there. Just kind of got involved.
So you got involved people as a ref. Yep. So how long did you work for them just as a referee?
Probably a good year, and then towards the end of that year was sort of when Force Pro Wrestling kind of came knocking in.
And we got to see the debut of Inferno?
Inferno, yes. The Mighty Inferno. So how that happened?
Best part about this, we got the Inferno mask sitting right here in the room.
As a relic.
I remember the first shows with you. I remember being there, because I was... I was a Force fan from the beginning when they started the shows in Morinville.
Yeah.
And then when he said he's starting in Edmonton, I was there from the beginning. That was a great promotion to me. I thought it was just fun.
It was tons of fun. And how my first match came about, I'm sitting at work one day, and it was about probably 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday. And get a text message from Kurt. Says, "Ivan needs somebody to step in on the show tonight. They want to put somebody under a hood and just to help out. Do you want to do it?" And I'm sitting there looking at... I probably stared at my phone probably a good 5 minutes going, I can't believe this is actually, chance. This is going to happen. Yeah. Because when I did the training camp, my first training camp, lots of the guys were going, oh, I'm going to be the world champion. I'm going to be, me and my buddy here are going to be the tag team champions. And they asked me, what was my goal? And I said, to have a match.
To wrestle. Just to wrestle alone.
Just if I had one match and never had another one after that, I could say I did it. And this text message was saying, you're going to do it. You're, since you were 4 years old, this was your dream. You're going to do it.
Yeah.
And I said, absolutely 100% sure. And like, whatever they want me to
do. You've been reffing for a while, though, at this point, right?
Yeah, I've been reffing.
But you've never gotten to actually take that match yet.
Yep. So
first match is when?
I don't remember the exact date. I know it was in July.
We got the card on the wall here?
Yeah.
I think it says July 10th.
July 12th.
Or 12th. Sorry.
Yeah.
July 12th, so it would have been about, what, 2013?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think that was about when they debuted in Edmonton.
Yep, so I remember being just terrified because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what to expect, and I get to the venue, and the very first guy I walk into is a guy you guys know as Ugg. The very first guy I met when I walked in the doors, and he introduces himself, and he says, yeah, we're working together tonight. And I'm looking at this guy who stands probably a good foot taller than me, and he's got probably 120 pounds on me going...
Big scary dude if you met him in a dark alleyway.
Yeah, and I'm looking at him going, what did I get myself into? So, I didn't have any gear. I had the mask, wasn't that something I bought in Mexico? You know, it was just
okay, so that's just a random, like, just something you wanted to buy, and just a mask you wanted.
I happened to be in Mexico, it was a few years earlier, and I thought that'd be cool to buy a Mexican wrestling mask.
So that's in a Mexican original, then, not just a mask that you found at a store here in Canada. Then.
This is legit Mexican.
I love it even more, because I got to see the debut of Inferno, and now I know that this mask was from Mexico. It's even better.
And so when we kind of talked about what's going to happen, and the cool moment for me happened, they asked me what I wanted for music, and I was like, I really don't care, because I was just focusing on not crapping my pants, you know, really. And, Ugg goes out first, and they play his music, and he's out there, and I'm standing, there was a moment, probably 30, 40 seconds, where I'm standing behind the curtain, and it's just me standing there in my mask, in my gym shorts, and I couldn't think of anything but my grandmother at the time, because, you know, this is where it started.
The person
know?
That got you started in this?
Yeah, so a little story no one's ever heard. I stood there and I cried for probably a good 30 seconds just because I was about to realize the dream that I had, you know, that my grandmother kind of facilitated. And every match I've had since then, right before I go out the curtain, I always, say a little prayer and talk to my grandmother a bit, because it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be here. So
she gave you the inspiration at first. She was the one that put wrestling in you.
Yeah, and so my music hits, and I don't even remember what the music was. And
honestly, I can't say I do either. Cause I was there, but I don't remember. It was a couple years ago.
And I remember thinking before going out there, going, "Okay, I'm supposed to be the baby face. I got to be like just the most excited guy in the building." And I get out there, and I'm doing my best. I'm just so happy. And it's just like, you could have heard a pin drop, because nobody knew who I was.
Okay, I'll honestly say, once you got in there, my crew, Brian, Delmer, and the other guys that were there, we were, I guess, sick motherfuckers, because we were chanting for Ugg to kill you. Like, we wanted Ugg to kill you.
Yeah?
Well, new guy, new little guy, especially your size versus him.
Yep.
We were like, kill him, Ugg! I think it was the first time in a while we had cheered for Ugg.
And he did not disappoint, I could tell you that. And getting in the ring and just staring across the ring at the guy and going, he's going to kill me. Like, he's legitimately going to kill me. This is going to be the end of my life right here.
Poetic would it be? You die in a wrestling ring. It's your passion.
And so the match happened.
Not a great thing, because I know what's happened, but you know what I mean, though. Yeah, I'm not saying it. Anybody should die in a ring. I'm just saying the poetics of it, in a sense.
So the match itself, I don't remember a whole lot, because he actually legitimately knocked me out.
Really?
Yeah.
Early on, or?
I don't... It's probably about mid, close to the end of the match. What I remember was I was standing in the corner, and he was chopping me. And I told him beforehand, like, if you want to do that, go ahead, because I bruise really easily. And I wasn't wearing a shirt or anything, so I was like, chop me like 4 or 5 times, it'll be great. and he hit me twice, and he told me afterwards, because I was almost bleeding, he said he felt so bad, he didn't want to hit me anymore.
Oh, dude.
And then I remember standing in the corner, and then I was laying in the middle of the ring, and I have no idea that lapse of time what happened. And I remember waking up and the referee standing over me going, holy crap, like, holy shit, man, are you okay? Are you okay? And just, it seemed like it was, like, so long, but it was really only a few seconds. And I'm looking up at him going, I don't understand, where, what am I doing? Where, you know?
Just gone.
And then quickly realizing, all right, I'm in the middle of a wrestling ring. There's, I don't know how many fans are there, probably 70 or 80 fans there. I gotta wake up, because this guy's actually gonna kill me if I don't, so, yeah, and, we finished the match, and I actually won the match by disqualification, and afterwards, he did a follow-away slam. He was facing your guys' side of the ring, I remember specifically where you guys were sitting, and,
We always sat on the ones that you walk in the doors, the seats right there to the left of the doors we always took.
Yep, so, he was facing you guys, and he gave me the follow-away, and he threw me so hard, I actually had to grab the ropes on the other side of the ring so I didn't fall out.
Oh, really?
So he threw me clear across the ring. And, wow. He was so proud of that. Every time I saw him after that, he's like, hey, remember the time I threw you across the ring? I'm like, yeah, man, I remember.
I got a quick question. We saw Ugg for a long time with Force Wrestling before that. We worked for RCW for a little bit. I haven't seen him since Force closed their doors. Can you get an update on him? I haven't heard anything of him.
You know what? He's I haven't really talked to him. I think I only talked to him once since then. There was some interest in bringing him into PWA. I think he's kind of just spending his time just enjoying his family right now, to be honest with you.
Okay. So I just thought maybe I could get if you know.
No, it's just...
I always enjoyed his character. Just that big guy. He's easy. It was a great name to chant because it's just Ugg. Ugg. So the crowd could get behind that real easy, and they did, because he turned face not too far later.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, he's, as far as I know, that's all he's doing, you know?
Okay.
So that was the story of the first match.
Okay, so getting back to your passion, what's the biggest inspiration for your career? Was it your grandmother? You say you think about it every time.
Yeah, you know what? I do it for my grandmother. I do it for me. And also, you do hear a lot of people saying you can't do it.
Okay.
You cannot. And because of my size, and to this day, I mean, I've had probably 20 matches now, and I still have people telling me you can't do it. You're too small.
I don't agree, because, dude, you're actually one of my favorite guys to watch in that ring.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Because I know every time you've come out, it's just such an enjoyable match for you. When you were Inferno, I mean, I was watching that, and I know that first one, we were all just like, who the hell is good? But, hey, you in that match, and we got to respect you, because you kept coming back, and you kept pushing it.
Yeah, and it really does, you know, even as a kid, I was always the entertainer of the family. I was always the comedian. I was always I had to put on a show, you know. And now, that's what it is. That's what it's about, you know, getting in front of that crowd and entertaining people. And it is driven by the fact that I know people enjoy seeing it, and also by the fact that I know there are people telling me I can't do it. And it's just me kind of giving them the middle finger, saying, you know what, not only can I do it, but I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do it, and everybody's going to love it.
Okay, so let's go with this. What wrestlers would you say have inspired you over like, ones that you try to emulate, ones that you think have influenced you at all, in your style and your everything?
Sure. I was always
big star wrestlers, and even guys maybe that help train you and things like that have influenced your style. Like, for big stars, who would they be? Like, ones that
Bret Hart, you know, that's the typical Canadian answer.
Any Canadian wrestler, Bret's got to be in there somewhere.
Because he wasn't the biggest guy, he wasn't the flashiest guy, but he was so technically sound. And I've always, even as a kid, it's funny to look back now and remembering, I always enjoyed Bret Hart. I always enjoyed Mr. Perfect. As a kid, I didn't know why I enjoyed it, but I knew I knew it was good.
The technical ability.
Yeah, I knew it was good.
You know now.
And now I go back and watch it, and I really enjoy that. I really enjoyed Rey Mysterio's work from WCW. I really enjoyed Chris Jericho's work from, you know, ECW and WCW. Guys, the smaller guys that were always told you can't do it. You know, their attitudes and their personalities and their style are all things that I really enjoyed. So, you know, when you see me do a suicide dive, that's a little bit of a nod towards, you know, those guys, when you see me doing flying head scissors and the Ranas and things like that. Locally, you know what? I don't want to say I'm really emulating or trying to be anybody, because you have to stand out. So,
yeah.
You know, I learned a lot from guys like Michael Blaze, and I learned a lot from, you know, Massive Damage, and but by no means do I want to get in the ring and be those guys. You know, I want
to
be different.
Hey, I want to. I'd love to see you in the ring with MRB. I could tell you that right now.
It's happened.
Oh no! But it just, to me, I'm watching you getting better and better every time. You and Colton Kelly, the past 2 months, have had phenomenal shows. We'll get onto that in a little bit. But yeah. I'm saying I watch you every month, and you're just better and better every show. I can honestly say that as a fan.
Thank you. You're always your own worst critic, and I always go back after my matches, and I look
for the worst spots, right?
I ask anybody that was there, anybody that was watching, what did you think? What did you like? What did you not like? And I always keep that in my mind, and then I always try to make a point the next time I go out there to do something similar to what I did the last time that people didn't like, but do it in a way that was going to be more acceptable, because then I knew I could do it.
All right. So you worked for Force Pro Wrestling for a few months there. I saw you work there a few times.
Yeah.
And then now you're with PWA.
Yep.
When I know this, but let everybody know, when did you first debut with PWA as, and how did they come up with Frenetico?
Sure.
From the guy you were playing in Force Wrestling as Inferno. How did Frenetico come about, and when did you start PWA as a wrestler?
Sure. I actually did work a few PWA shows as Inferno. Sort of in and around the same time that I was working for Force Pro Wrestling. My second or third match was in Calgary against Richie Rage.
I don't know if I've ever seen Inferno on the Edmonton scene, though.
No.
I've missed a few shows here and there, but...
There was the... Force Pro was the only Edmonton showings of Inferno.
Okay, I've seen pretty much all of Inferno's Edmonton
career. Yes, you have. There was the show in Calgary... And then there was a show in Lloydminster.
Okay.
It was Inferno versus Priest versus Travis Cole.
Oh, that was the Border City show. Yes, the Border Show.
So much fun.
I remember. I didn't get out to that one, but I remember it. I remember the card coming up on the thing.
I wanted to say it's easily the funnest show I've ever been a part of, but it definitely in my top three.
Okay.
So much fun. So, getting back to your question about what happened with to get Frenetico. Last year's Night of Champions was in,
Calgary.
Yeah. And a couple of weeks before, I got a call from Kurt, and he said, "Hey man, you know, you're doing your Inferno thing, and you're helping us out lots, so we're gonna get you involved in the show. For Night of Champions, we're gonna put you in the ladder match for the Mayhem title."
I remember there being a mystery
entrance. Yeah, that's right, the mystery... And it was, I almost felt
I'll
bad.
I'll honestly say, between me and all my friends, from the people we knew that were working in Alberta at the time, we were thinking, oh, who could it be? But I'm sorry to say, Inferno never came up, and no. Frenetico wasn't even on our radar at that point.
I almost felt bad, because, like, I think people were expecting some megastar or a returning PWA star.
I'll say this from the fan point of view, I honestly was expecting someone being, like, someone I... Doesn't be a PWA guy, but somebody we knew, at least a name we knew of.
One of the names I heard that was a rumor, I think it was probably even a fan started rumor, was supposed to be Ravenous Randy Myers.
Really?
That was one
I never even contemplated.
Yeah, and I heard, and it was so funny for me, because I'm like,
I know he would work in ACCW at the time, yeah. so I didn't even contemplate that.
So when I came out and everyone's like, who the hell is this guy? I just felt bad, because like, people were expecting this big surprise, and it was somebody new.
Oh, trust me, it ended up being a great surprise.
So... what happened was this. So I get the call, and they say, yeah, we want to put you in the show. I was like, awesome. And at the time, Force Pro Wrestling was running a show in the West End the weekend before. It was a community festival for Westview or something.
Yeah, I remember that, because there was a PWA show that night.
Yep.
Honestly, I know the story. Michael Richard Blaze and Kenny Stryker worked the first match PWA when they worked matches the same night in Force.
Yep. Richie Rage and Chase Patrick also.
Oh yeah, I always forget about them, but I just remember because I'm a huge MRB fan, honestly.
So what happened was probably it couldn't have been any more than 2 days before that show, I got a text message from one of the higher ups of PWA, and they said you can't use Inferno anymore, and I was like, why? And apparently there was some confusion. They were making comparisons to a different Inferno that used to be around, a guy named Evan Inferno, who I've never met. And people were all like, oh, no, no, we don't want to confuse it. And so we gotta change it. And so, yeah, that's the story I was told anyway. So I get this text message.
Probably just wanted you in a new gimmick, a new gimmick for the show.
So they say, okay, you gotta think of something else. And I'm like 2 days before a show. And I was like, holy crap, like, I gotta think of two days, I gotta think of, like, what I'm gonna be known as from now on.
And you gotta get new gear, too.
And I had to get something new and think of something real quick, so, me and, Maniac sat down and started to brainstorm a little bit about what we could do, and we didn't come up with anything. So what happened was, I was at work, and I was told that we still wanted to stick with the Luchador type character.
Small little guy under a mask.
Yeah, we were gonna stick with the mask. Whatever I thought of had to sound, it's gonna sound weird, but it had to sound Mexican. So
okay, I can see it. It
had to sound like a luchador name, and so I wanted to use the name Impulse. And I don't know why, I just like the name Impulse, but I translated
DC
it.
DC Comics reference, I can say I know that's DC Comics. That's DC Comics.
And so I tried to do a translation to Spanish, and it comes out as Impulse, so it didn't really work.
Yeah.
So I was looking at an English-Spanish translator at work, and I was just trying to think of, like, just action-type words, something that might sound really cool, because you've got, like, fire and all these other things that you kind of associate with luchador names and dragons and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it came up with a bunch of suggested words, and one of the suggested words was frantic. So I translated frantic from English to Spanish, and it comes out as frenetico.
So frenetico, you're actually frantic, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So I saw it, and I kind of went, frenetico, and I thought, you know, in Mexico, they had Mystico, who, you know...
Mystico,
and they had...
Sin Cara, and now is Mysticism.
Right. So they had that, and they had Cibernetico, and I thought, well, frenetico
works.
Sounds like it fits in that realm of names. And I rolled it around in my head a little bit, and I thought, I like that. And I started asking a couple people at work that kind of knew what I was doing. I was like, what do you think of frenetico? And that's got something to it.
Yeah.
And so I pitched the name to Kurt, and he's like, yeah, you know, that sounds good. I like that. Let's go with that. And then I had to kind of think of a gimmick with it, but...
I don't think there was really a gimmick at the beginning.
Really
just
isn't.
A guy who jumped off a really high ladder.
Yeah.
I honestly say I missed the landing, because half the crowd stood up and we couldn't see it.
Yep. So, but frenetico's debut was actually for Forest Pro, so that's that show they had at the West End.
Okay.
They said you had to think of something, so that's when I came up with frenetico. I got the mask. The mask, I don't think at the time, had the slit through the top of it.
I remember that weekend, because I remember going to the PWA show, and then I saw the Forest show at Mooreville the next day, so I remember that weekend.
I was supposed to be on that show, and I'll tell you why I wasn't here in a second.
Okay.
I was in the opening match. Frenetico's debut match was against William Saint.
Oh, little Willie.
And so what happened was, we had our match, and at the end, I'm gonna go hit a moonsault, and he moves out of the way, and I crash and burn. And as soon as I hit the mat, I knew I was hurt. What happened was, to do moonsault, you have to do it perfectly, or it's just gonna end badly.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it perfectly that time. I lifted off one foot, and I kind of turned my body a little bit. And when I landed really hard and awkwardly on my left arm. And I instantly knew I broke my arm. As soon as I landed, I knew I was hurt. And so they had somebody there at the time, and I also messed up my leg really bad. That was from it was like a calf, really big Charlie horse.
Oh.
At the same time.
Oh, dude.
And so as soon as I hit the mat, I knew I was hurt. And the referee, it was kind of funny. Are we allowed to curse at all?
Oh, go right ahead. Okay. Trust me, we have an explicit rating on iTunes. No worries.
It was funny. He came up to me afterwards, and he's like, I knew you were hurt, because as soon as you hit the mat, you went, fuck, shit, fuck, fuck, fuck.
So, I honestly wish I had seen that.
So, but we had to finish the match. You know, that's how you do it when you're a wrestler. You can't just stop. So we finished the match, and I won. You know, I won the match, and rolling out of the ring, and I'm just like, I'm so excited because I won the match, and all these, there's a lot of kids there, and I have to tag all, you know, high-fiving, and I was in so much pain because I knew I'd hurt myself, and I got to the back where we were changing, and I was so mad because I knew I got messed up, and they had someone there who had some EMT training, and and she was kind of, you know,
so, looking okay, at so me. So far with wrestling, you've got concussion, torn rotator cuff, broken arm, and at the same time you broke your arm, just Charlie horse the crap out of your leg.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just want to track those, the injury so far.
Yeah, there's only one other one, but we'll talk about that one later.
We'll get to that one.
So, after and then the show, they kind of had to stall waiting for these PWA guys. So their idea was during intermission, they were going to have an autographs and picture photo session with Frenetico.
Oh, crap.
So I had to come back out, be so happy and excited, and I could barely walk, and I knew my arm was hurt. So I had to sign autographs and take pictures, and then it was get in the ring with Frenetico and take pictures, and put Frenetico in a headlock and take pictures, and it was like, was the longest...
But the things you do for what you love, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, man. Like, I don't regret it. I was upset at the time that I had to do it, knowing that I was hurt, but in hindsight, yeah, I did. I would have done it again. That was the right way of doing it. But what happened...
You do it for the fans, like you said earlier.
Absolutely, yeah. And they were happy, and you know, when you're in agony and pain, you kind of see the smile you're putting on people's faces, and you're like, like that's why we're doing it, right?
Definitely.
But Night Champions was the following week. I didn't go to the doctor because... One, I knew I was hurt, and two, I really didn't want to know how bad it was, and that's stupid, and I don't ever recommend it if you think you're hurt.
Okay, I remember watching that match in Calgary. So the broken arm is why you didn't work more until the next day, then, obviously.
Yeah, the broken arm, and then I couldn't barely walk was why.
Okay,
I,
so you had an obvious excuse to get out of the show the next day.
Yeah.
Okay, so we go to a week later, broken arm, not... You haven't been to the doctor?
I haven't been to the doctor.
Okay.
How'd
you do it then?
I didn't go to a medical doctor. I went to my chiropractor because I always do that after I go to have a wrestling match. And they told me, you know, I think it's just a sprain. So wrap it up real good and don't do anything physical. Which I automatically didn't. I didn't tell them, but I was like, well, that's out the window. But
yeah.
And then we get to Calgary and I, the guys that I worked with, I told them, you know, what was going on, and so they knew what was happening. And the thing with when you have six people in a match, it helps.
You can protect the guy.
You can. And so the aforementioned dive.
I remember that. We're just from my point of view, we can't see past all this crowd because we're on the far side, and you guys decided to go the opposite side of the room.
Yeah.
On the other side of the crowd, who all decided to stand up and watch this, and we're all standing up trying to see. You see this ladder, and I see this little blue man just climb up the ladder.
Yeah, man.
and then I don't know what happens from here, because I couldn't see.
It was kind of like, okay, everybody has to have a spot kind of in the match to shine, and that was my spot, so I was the smallest guy in the match, so we kind of thought, hey... Frenetico, you're going to climb up the 16-foot ladder and, you know, kill everybody. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. but this is kind of comes to another really cool part of one of my favorite moments of my career. You can see me, and I'm walking to the ladder. I'm limping because I was still suffering from that leg thing from the week before. And I climbed to the top of the ladder, and I'm standing there, and you guys could probably see this. I do this, and I'm pointing up to the sky. I
remember that, yes.
And you can't hear it on the DVD or anything like that.
No, we were on the set, you know, definitely.
Talking to my grandmother, you know, again. Because I get up there, and could have been the elevation, could have been the warmth of the lights, but, like, I just felt like she's here, man, you know?
Yeah.
And this is going to be okay. And I look up to the sky, and I said, this one's for you. And I crossed myself, and I jumped.
I remember the point up and the cross, and you jumping, but I don't know how you came down, though. Somebody told me it was a table, but then I found out it wasn't a table.
No, there was a
table. That's what people were saying, it's a table, but then
no.
I found out last year it wasn't a table.
There was no table, just five other guys that I bowled over, like bowling pins, I guess. And you can see, when you see it on the DVD, you can see me laying there, clutching my arm, because I didn't land on it badly, but, like, there's not really a good way to, like, someone asked you, how many times did you practice that, or how easy is it to jump off a ladder? Well, no, like, you just do it.
You jump, and you hope for the best.
You hope for the best.
You hope the guys will let you catch you.
Yeah. And so that's, they jumped off a ladder. And
honestly, I remember that happening, and then we're sitting in the ring, and there's still, everybody's down on the other side, and there's nothing happening for essentially our side of the building. And the oddest thing to me, highlight of the match was Sturgeon Hazard coming out and getting on the most rickety ladder, climbing up, and he just bumps himself off the ladder.
Yeah, so
that was just to kill time for the crowd. And then you guys finally making it back afterwards.
Yeah, there's actually a bit of a story behind that, too.
Can you give me an update on that one?
Yeah, for sure. Just touching back on the second for the ladder, what was really cool for me, standing on top of the ladder, and I look out into the crowd, and I don't know how many people were there. I was told it was close to 500.
Oh, dude, that place was packed.
But looking over into the crowd, and there's six guys in this match, and looking out into the crowd, and they're all looking at me.
Everybody's waiting
for
you.
They're right here, man. They're right in the palm of my hand, and I knew, like, just for that instant, you know,
you've got
this is my moment right now.
Yeah.
And it was the cool, and that was another one of my moments for my career where I went, if I never do anything again after this, I've gone as high as I needed to go, man. That was awesome. So away I went, and the story with Sergeant Hazard and the ladder. The ladder, if you recall, I set the ladder up in the corner before I left the ring.
Yeah, the ricketiest ladder in the match, too.
Yeah, I put it in, and that was strategic. It was supposed to be there. We were going to use it later on. And when we came back, we came back to the ring, and it was moved, and it was gone. We didn't know what happened. No, none of us saw it. So
honestly, I know why. I can understand why you did it, because he's got, like, three-quarters of the crowd. Like, you got the one side of the crowd can just look at you guys and watch you guys all slowly getting up, but you got three quarters of that crowd going, "Fuck is this?"
Yeah,
right. We can't see shit.
Yeah.
So I know why he did it, but it's just like I thought it was just odd.
apparently Lance Storm told him to go out and do that.
Well, you got to keep the three quarters of the crowd don't even know what's going on.
No,
so I can understand why they called that a little audible there.
What was happening is, we were laying there in agony. That was pretty much what was happening. And then shortly after, you saw me climbing.
I think you were the first one to come back. So with the pain you were in, and every time you come back, I'm like, I'm not surprised now.
Yeah. And then we came back, and as we know, I did not win that match.
No, I
got taken down by Brett Morgan. Probably one of the first Brett Morgan power bombs in PWA history.
That was an early Brett Morgan too. He only debuted not too long before that. He was still relatively new to the promotion.
Very new, and I took a power bomb onto a ladder, and that spelled the end for Fanatico for that night.
And the winner of that match ended up being the PWA original, Marky. Yeah, so great wrestler. So much deserved to win it, but would have been just amazing Fanatico winning it on his first night in.
Yeah, you know, that's...
that would have been an interesting one, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
What we've seen from you, though, over the past year since you've joined... Not even a year since you've joined PWA has been awesome. I honestly said, I've seen a guy go from getting better and better every month, because I'm at almost every show, and I've just watched you get better and better every show.
Thank you, and I appreciate that, and that's the goal, you know? Get out there and do it better every single show. You know, learn something, and you do have, you know, you've probably heard the expression, you know, shut your mouth and open your ears, you know, and like something like that. That's what I do, man. I show up, I don't talk a whole lot, I listen, because there are some guys that are at the PWA shows that just, they have so much knowledge and so much to share.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed the part one of my interview with PWA's own Smurf, Fernetico. You can catch part two in 2 weeks on the next edition of Wrestling Clarity. So up next, I'm going to go through a review of this past weekend's Monster Wrestling card that happened on April 4th, 2015 at the Alberta Avenue Community Hall. A very good show. Got off to a great start with JJ Spade defeating, legitimately, this guy's name is someone new, with a moonsault. Beautiful executed moonsault, came off of a distraction from Rick Jules, who distracted someone new, and JJ capitalized with the moonsault. And I've heard this kid's got more in his back pocket, which I'm looking forward to seeing down the road. So hopefully looking forward to more of this kid, and he's going to be someone special for SCW, I guarantee it, ladies and gentlemen. Next up, we had Dean Richter versus Rick Jules, who Dean Richter caught the win with a roll-up on Rick Jules when he grabbed the tights after a distraction from someone new. Guys, getting his revenge on Rick Jules. So, after the match, someone new and Rick Jules had a little bit of a brawl. And as Rick Jules went for his finisher, someone new got away, ran out, and we'll see where this feud continues. Could be a feud next month of Leo Burke. Could be a first-round match. You never know. Then from there, we did the heavyweight title match early in the night, but we had some great matches later on. So, Kato defeated Weird Johnny after Johnny sent the main referee to the back and brings in his own referee, the Amish Zombie, which made no sense. He doesn't have the power to do that. Who then, as he's getting ready to fight, Kato grabs him in a roll-up, and the Zombie counts 1, 2, 3 on Johnny's shoulders to the mat. So Kato keeps his title, and Johnny wasn't too happy with the Amish Zombie after that. From there, we went to an interview session with Chris Parrish. Came out, and he talked to the crowd, told them that Tyler James is out of the Empire. So out comes James, they get into a brawl, James gets the upper hand until the Weapons of Mass Seduction came out and helped triple team down on James, and Chris Parrish ended up knocking him out with brass knuckles, which actually ends up taking him out of the triple threat match later in the night, which became a singles match. The beatdown continues until the Tattoo Terminators come out, and we get a tag team match between the Tattoo Terminators and the Weapons of Mass Seduction. Tattoo Terminators ended up winning, but by disqualification, due to the fact that Onslaught hit the ring and attacked Terminators with a chair, beat them both down, have them both laying out, and they proclaimed after the match that they're coming for the tag team titles. So we'll see where that feud goes from there. I think it'll be a good feud, good upcoming team out of the Weapons of Mass Seduction, and good veteran team of the Tattoo Terminators. Also both former Leo Burke Cup champions. So we'll see what comes up next from these two teams. We went to intermission from there, and then when we came back, we had the provincial title. This was originally supposed to be a triple threat, but as I explained earlier, Chris Parrish knocked Tyler James out with the brass knucks, and he ended up not being able to work the match. So Diablo defeated Chris Parrish with a beautiful 450 splash to cap off a phenomenal match. Great match overall from these two. They went back and forth. All great moves you'd expect from these guys and more. Honestly, it was probably my match tonight. If you get a chance, Sane Fan has it up on YouTube. Watch it. Great match. From there, we went to the main event. Ripper title, great match. Hardcore match, as always, under the Ripper title rules. Irishman defeated the Sin City Strangler after he put Strangler onto a table and then put a ladder beside the table, climbed up the ladder, stepped onto the top and jumped off, splashing the Sin City Strangler through a table to win it after both this is a bloody match. Both men worked so hard during it. They both beat the crap out of each other, but Irishman came out on top, getting his Ripper title back, which means he has the Ripper factor back, and he has a chance to cash in sometime against the champion, and we'll see when that's going to happen, because Ripper factor is a big deal in this company, so he can get you a title match. So ladies and gentlemen, that was my review of the Monster Pro Wrestling event from April 4th.
Upcoming events.
As the jingle said, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the upcoming events. First up, we got April 11th, PWA Apocalypse at the Century Casino in Calgary, Alberta. Then, the next weekend, April 17th, RCW presents Aggression at the Legion 275 in Calgary, Alberta. The next night, April 18th, RCW presents the Maria Waschuk Memorial Show at the Evansdale Community League in Edmonton, Alberta. Side note, I will not be attending the April 18th RCW show because I will be in Montreal on vacation, and I will also be at a Northern Championship Wrestling show on that night. So if there's any wrestling fans in the Montreal area who listen to the show, let me know, and maybe we can meet up and I can talk to some new fans at the show. But don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, Mike the Ref and the wrestling man Brandon Hamilton, along with the rest of our crew, will be at the April 18th Maria Wasichuk Memorial Show at the Evansdale Community League. From there, we have April 25th, PWA Hysteria at the Northgate Lions Senior Rec Center in Edmonton, Alberta. Week later, we have what we have been promoting for the past little while on this network. May 2nd, we have the MPW Leo Burke Cup at the Alberta Avenue Community Hall in Edmonton, Alberta, featuring Leo Burke himself presenting the cup to the winner of the Leo Burke Cup tournament. In the next few weeks, we will have more details to release about this show. On May 8th is the RCW 12th Anniversary Tour Night 1 in Calgary, Alberta, and the next night on May 9th, the RCW 12th Anniversary Tour Night 2 in Edmonton, Alberta at the Evandale Community League. They both will feature New Japan wrestler and Bullet Club member Kenny Omega. So don't miss either of those shows, because you'll get to see the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion Kenny Omega. From there, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say thank you for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed the interview, hope you enjoyed the review, and I hope you enjoyed getting up to date on all the wrestling in the Edmonton area, and actually in the Alberta area. So, ladies and gentlemen, I will be signing off for this week, but don't forget, support indie wrestling wherever you are. See you again in 2 weeks.
This has been Wrestling Clarity on the Edmonton Sports Podcast Network.